Welcome to Speak in Flow, the podcast that helps leaders like you unlock the power of your voice, achieve maximum potential and flow through exceptional communication. I'm your host, Melinda Lee, and I am passionate about helping company leaders and their teams master public speaking, pitching with impact, and stepping into their full leadership potential. Thanks for tuning in to the Speak in Flow podcast, which is the top 10% of podcasts worldwide. When you stick around until the end, I have an exclusive gift just for listeners only, something that will immediately help you and your team up-level your communication. Let's dive in. Welcome, dear listeners, to the Speak in Flow podcast, where we dive into unique stories to share so that you and your team can achieve maximum potential and flow even when the pressure is high. Today, I have an amazing experienced leader with just lots of stories to tell, and he's actually telling an untold story, which in history we think has been told, but it hasn't. And he's taken the courage to do that. His name is Wayne Kalasian. He is the managing director for Secretarius Advisor. He's the author of Saving Michelangelo's Dome. I'm so glad he's here. Welcome, Wayne.
Thank you, Melinda. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate your asking me.
I am ready to dive in because I love the topic that we're going to talk about. It is around written communication, but a lot of what we're going to discuss today is applicable to verbal communication as well. So as I mentioned, we're going to talk about an untold story. So most people have not told the story because it's quite complicated, but Wayne has taken the initiative to go ahead and do that through his book. And so Wayne, can you tell us a little bit about what you do and also what made you passionate about telling the story?
Thank you for the question. I've been a civil engineer and a structural engineer for almost the entirety of my professional career. And that's now 45 years. And construction is in my blood. I love art history. I love geology. I have a wide variety of academic interests that focus around building things. And when I was an undergraduate in college, I stumbled upon this mention that the Great Dome at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome was at the point of catastrophic collapse in 1742. Now, this dome had been designed by Michelangelo. It was revered. And if you've been to Rome, you know how it dominates the skyline. The Italians consider it as a national treasure. And I had never known this. And I had just assumed when I'm 20 years old that this was a well-known story, had been told often. Little did I know, years later, I never came across it in anywhere. So I became determined to learn more about this episode. And sure enough, it's a very important and significant chapter in Western civilization because it created the practice of engineering as we practice it today. Wow. Engineering had been around before this and used in a sort of certain way, but not the way we define it. The way we use mathematics and science was exactly how the episode in my book actually creates and invents. And it becomes a very important and significant time in forming really Western civilization. So that's what got me started. And I, as you can tell, I love the story. It's an untold story. I quickly learned why it was untold, because it's a hard story to tell. You had to be an engineer to understand the technical concepts. Mm-hmm. And engineers are really good at many things, but they're generally not known for good writing. And my personal I would say my personal philosophy is to write well and to write in a conversational tone so that so that your audience can be engaged. And that was my philosophy going in. And when I learned how complicated the story was and how many characters were involved and how difficult it was to keep up with these characters, a lot of the texts or the source references are in Italian, 18th century Italian, no less. It was a real challenge, but I loved the challenge. And I've gotten very good feedback from the book, and it was a wonderful experience. But if I didn't know how to write, and if I didn't know how to communicate well, I would not have pulled it off. It would not have been enjoyable. What I learned more than anything is that you have to be able to communicate, to connect to your audience. Writing a book for the sake of writing a book is meaningless if your readers don't read it. And so I really made a point of wanting to engage it. I was fully cognizant when I was writing of that my audience, I don't want my audience to be a group of professors of civil engineering or academics. I wanted the audience to be the everyday person, the everyday reader. That was my goal. And so I knew I had to communicate in a way that would connect with them using simple sentences, simple words, not oversimplified, not dumbed down, not condescending, but in writing in a way that they would quickly engage with. And that has been my approach, not only through the book, but also in my professional life. That's, I think, the most effective way to get messages across.
Wow, I really can't wait to read more about it and actually pick it up myself because it sounds so great. I mean, you've taken the time to really cater and develop this for the general audience. And even though this is a fantastic structure, with so much engineering and design, in the background to really help us to understand the fantastic, all the thought and put behind it. That's amazing.
Thank you. Thank
Yeah.
you. It was fun. It was hard, but and you know, like most things in life, the hard things also turn out to be fun,
Yeah.
especially in hindsight. Right now.
During it, what were you thinking during it? What was the most difficult point during the development of this?
Yeah. So, as I said, you know, my goal was to communicate in a way that would, connect, resonate with the average reader, with the day-to-day reader. And being able to communicate difficult technical concepts
Right.
in a more simple way requires a mastery of the topic that most people sort of don't fully grasp until they're in that same situation. So, for example, it's one thing for me as a civil engineer to talk to another civil engineer about a technical issue. We can use words and jargon and phrases that we commonly understand because we're in that environment. But when I am trying to communicate those same concepts to someone who's not an engineer, who doesn't live in that world, I have to use certain words or use fewer words or different words. And I have to simplify my language. I have to be concise. I need to be able to use analogies that would help bring the images, the imagery to life. So there's a degree of work that's required and thought, a lot of thought. How do I take this complicated issue and boil it down to its essence in a way that the audience will be able to read in a simple paragraph and say, okay, I think I understand that. By the way, I know not all the concepts in my book. The general reader will immediately grasp. I mean, some of these are technical concepts. And some of the feedback I've gotten is, you know, I didn't understand everything in the book, But you made the issues that things that I could understand, I could more readily understand. So that I think was the biggest challenge was taking the difficult conceptual technical issues and phrasing them in a way and communicating them in a way that the general audience could still appreciate. And by the way, the technical audience that reads the book, they will have assurance that, yeah, you know what, Galayzin got it right. He simplifies the issue without dumbing it down, right? And so that I think was the hardest part. The other thing that was difficult, and I think in communication, we come across this too. The story itself takes place largely over 12 months. And during that time, there's a lot of concurrent events. And yet, you can't, when you're writing about it or communicating about it, you can't just keep jumping around back and forth, back and forth, even though that is what was going on, right? What you need to do is you be able to, you need, I use an analogy like a spaghetti, where you have a bowl of spaghetti. You need to be able to take out the strand, straighten it out, put it on your plate, and then go for the next strand, straighten it out, put it on a plate, and then explain the strands and put them all together. And even so that even though my chapters read sequentially, right, chapters 2 through 12, they read like a linear story. Much of the story, it's going on at the same time, but it was impossible to tell the story if everything was confused and a big bowl of pasta. You needed to be able to have, and so that means you needed to have such a command of the story. You needed to know the story so well that you could actually know, okay, this strand of pasta gets placed first over here, and here's its story. And then I'm going to take this pasta, this strand of pasta, and it doesn't go right away. It goes into chapter 5, right? And then this one is going to be chapter 7, and then this one's going to be chapter 4. So you need to know the story so well. And then you have to think about it the way you'd like to think, you'd like to tell it versus how the reader would like to know. So you can't introduce things in a story if the reader hasn't been introduced to them first. You have superior knowledge. You know that there's 15 different characters, but if the but the reader doesn't know them, so they need to gradually be introduced to each of these 15 characters in a way that makes sense logically to the story and the way you want the story to go. The writer has a great deal of artistic license, but that doesn't mean the writer can be crazy. The writer needs to be mindful that the reader has to absorb the story. And so it was a great experience. I learned so much, and it taught me, it made me a much better communicator.
Yes. I can see that. I love the way that the spaghetti analogy. And do you think that Michelangelo had that much foresight as he was creating the dome in the same way that he could foresee how this was going to be? Like, did he have that much
But
detail?
Michelangelo is a very complicated character.
Got it.
And he did have grand visions for this being one of the greatest structures in Italy. He had no illusion. I mean, that was his,
Oh, that was his goal.
he consciously had the dome and of Florence at San, at as his model. And he patterned a lot of his design after the cathedral in Florence. There's no doubt that these domes, whoever designed these domes, they were way over their skis. I mean, the technical knowledge required to build them was surpassed They did
surpassed
not know. I mean,
the
so they didn't.
available knowledge at the time. I mean, today we understand how these domes are built. We have sophisticated technology to help us design them and build them. These are architects, artists, Brunelleschi in Florence, Michelangelo in Rome. They didn't have any of that. They did it by intuition, by judgment, experience, and trial and error. And that is the lesson of my book, is that up until this time in 1740, that's how construction happened. It was trial and error, intuition, gut feel. And
During the project, it was a trial.
during the project, or
During the
before, during, and after, okay, it was like complete.
wouldn't people, clients get upset if you are taking too long because there's a trial and error period?
Well, no, that was the way it was. It was expected. I mean, so long as your building didn't collapse, which happened a lot, the clients didn't know better, right? That was just the way construction was. But it was because of what happened at this building and this episode in my book, which changed all that, because the solution to fixing the dome that had cracked beyond, well, it was scary. It was terrifying. It was at the point of collapse. What the solution was, these three mathematicians who had no experience with construction, none, zero. But they had a lot of experience with mathematics and physics. And they were the ones who said, we can solve the problem with mathematics and science. Even though we don't know construction, we've never designed a thing in our life, we can draw on other disciplines to solve the problem. And it became the pathway forward to how we solve a lot of these real world challenges in the everyday world. Automobiles, obviously, skyscrapers, iPhones, refrigerators, on and on it goes. We solve our problems. How do we communicate better? Oh, let's invent an iPhone. Well, you use mathematics and science to do that, in variety, to design them and to manufacture them. How do I keep my food from spoiling? Well, we can invent a refrigerator. How do we do that? Well, we use a lot of math and science, believe it or not, to design and create a refrigerator. How do I build a bridge, a tunnel, a skyscraper? Mathematics and science. We take that for granted because that's the way things are. But until this episode in 1742, everything was seat of the pants. Everything was judgment, intuition, personal experience, talking to your friend. There was no discussion or consideration of mathematics and science as a precise way of solving a problem. And so, not to digress, but that really is the core message of the book, is that people were thinking out of the box. They communicated a message. By the way, it was a message that wasn't well received. These mathematicians were laughed
Oh,
out of.
really?
Oh yeah, no, that it was so far-fetched. It was ridiculous. And yet, the kernel of their idea lingered with some very thoughtful individuals. And the idea started to gain traction and more traction and more traction. So within 50 years, this concept of using mathematics and science to solve problems in the everyday world, it became commonplace within, as I say, 50 years. And then within 100 years, it was being taught at university levels as the way, as formal engineering training. So it was a remarkable episode. It's unknown, all right? People just don't know about this story, and it's just a remarkable story.
That is
So
fascinating.
I was so
I do consider myself blessed to be the one to tell it. It was so fortunate. I'm so fortunate to be the one to have told it.
I am so, that's why I'm very grateful and thankful for you being here, sharing your experience while writing this book. And what would you say would be the one leadership takeaway that you want people to remember when they're communicating with others?
Always keep your audience in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Never take for granted your audience. Be prepared for your audience. I give a number of talks. I teach and I give book talks. And even in my day-to-day conversations with my peers in the office, I'm mindful of whom I'm talking to. And I'm prepared. I don't just bloviate, which I've seen a lot of leaders do. They bloviate. And to me, that indicates that they're not prepared, right? That they don't have a central message, that they're not focused. They're just there to talk or fill time. And I respect other people's time, and I want them. There's only so many brain cells that we have in a day, right? And that's my right. There's only so many brain cells. And I want my brain cells, or I want other people's brain cells to be filled with good thoughts. And I want them to know what my message is. So that's my philosophy, is know your audience and be prepared.
Right. Keep them in mind, just like you did with the book. You gathered all your research and all the data and information. And like any leader, I think when we are experienced, we come into meetings with a lot of information, insights we want to pass, but sometimes we just spill it out, not really keeping. You could have done that with the book, but you carefully had the audience in mind and who the audience was, and took the time to lay out the spaghetti, what story's gonna go when, and so that it's easy to digest and easy to read. And so now we have an untold story told. And so I am so grateful for you and sharing your insight. So
Thank
keep
you.
your audience in mind. Really have a clear, direct message, clearly understandable message, so that people can have something to take away.
And then one more thing I might add is be concise and keep it as simple as you can. That I think too carries a long way.
Right. Yes. Thank you so much, Wayne, for
My
your insights
pleasure.
today. It was really fun.
It was. Thank you so much for having me, Melinda. It was a pleasure.
Apologize. And audience, thank you so much for being here today. I trust that you got your golden takeaway. Think about your audience, be concise, and go implement that right away in your next presentation or meeting. And remember, anytime you have a moment to communicate, it's also about connection and making a positive difference in your community and the world. Thank you so much for being here. Until next time, I'm your sister in flow. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye, Wayne. Thank you.
My pleasure, Melinda. It's take care, okay?
Take care.
Bye now.
That's a wrap on today's Speak and Flow podcast. I hope that you gained valuable insights to help you communicate with more clarity, connection, and confidence. Before you go, let me ask you this. Can your team communicate your founder story in a way that strengthens relationships and builds your company brand? If not, I've got a tool for you. Introducing, it's an AI Founder's Story Creator. This is a tool to help you craft a compelling story instantly that you can share with your team, and therefore your team can share with lots of people, building your brand. Grab this tool. In addition to creating immediately your founder story, you're also going to get one-on-one coaching with me so that we can continue to refine the story so that it's in alignment with your company messaging. Click on the link in the show notes, grab it today, and until next time, keep leading with confidence and courage.